You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague, Stuart Mandel. And we have a very, very special guest today, another colleague from The Athletic. The great Andy Staples is joining us. Special podcast today. First, Andy, thanks for joining us.
I get very, very special. Next time you two are on my show, I'm going to have to introduce you in a much more grandiose way than I have been. So,
Duly noted.
Yeah, I'm going to have to make sure I add a very or extremely to the intro.
Okay, a few hours before we started taping this, The Athletic dropped a massive story on the recruiting / NIL / college football front about Jaden Rashada, the four-star quarterback out of Northern California. And his recruitment has been much talked about offline in different conversations, what his deal was. There's a lot of wild speculation about it in our story, and nod to Andy on this big part of it, was able to obtain the contract that Florida's collective had put together. And for people who haven't read the story yet, what are you waiting for? And second of all, Andy, when you first started looking at this, what were the biggest things that jumped out at you?
How little he would have had to do to get these incredible monthly amounts. I mean, it's one thing, because I think we're desensitized to the amounts of these deals because we see them in the NBA and the NFL, and the numbers sort of go over our heads. Like when we hear about a quarterback in the NFL who's making $48 million a year, or a point guard who's making $57 million a year, and it just, you know, the numbers don't really make normal sense because you just don't think of them this way. But like to see it broken down monthly, and I'll go through the monthly amounts here. So it was a $500,000 upfront payment due on December 5th. And then beyond that, $250,000 a month as a freshman, $291,666.66 a month as a sophomore, $375,000 a month as a junior. And then, of course, you're supposed to be in the NFL by now, but should you be back for year number four, $195,833.33 a month as a senior. And here's what you have to do for that. You have to live in Gainesville, Florida.
Andy, you qualify for that.
Actually, I don't. I live in a suburb. I don't have a Gainesville address, so I do not qualify.
I guess he wouldn't have been able to go to an off-campus apartment then.
Yes, no, you
could. Or too far off-campus.
No, yeah, no, it couldn't go too far. If he lived in the apartments near my neighborhood, he would not be able to.
And this is where it's important to note that this is the way these NIL deals get around the fact that they are technically not supposed to be.
The tricky part is, like, they didn't put in four-year university or anything like enrolled student athlete at a four-year university, which we've seen on a few of the contracts that we've seen. It didn't have that. You could have actually been a baseball or basketball player at Santa Fe Community College. Well, it's called Santa Fe College now because it does have a couple of four-year degrees, but it's JUCO sports. So you only have 2 years of eligibility in their sports. But you could have played baseball or basketball at Santa Fe College, and it would have qualified you. One branded Twitter post and one branded Instagram post per month, up to 8 fan engagement events per year. These can include in-person appearances, social media engagements, video conferences or interviews, and none were to last longer than 2 hours. So basically 16 hours per year of this. And here's my favorite, the autograph requirement. Up to 15 pieces of merchandise per year. A pair of shoes, by the way, would count as one piece. That was specified in the contract.
I'm glad they thought to include that. that detail. There are a lot of details that got overlooked, but not, you know, whether a pair of shoes would count for one or two pieces of memorabilia. Well, look, this was a real contract that got signed the same day, signed by the player the same day he announced that he was flipping from Miami to Florida. Miami, we should note, at the time he committed to Miami in June, there was a report that he was getting $9.5 million. We were not able to confirm that that agreement ever existed.
By the way, his agent at the time, Mike Caspino, said in quote in that same story, he left millions more on the table.
From Florida. Right. From Florida. Which we were like, well, no, because if the Miami contract isn't for that much, then wouldn't they have just taken the Florida one if it was for so much more? Well, eventually the Florida one wound up being more than that. And that's I will go back to January 10th. That was the day that the Florida early enrollees all reported and Rashada wasn't there when we started calling around like, okay, why isn't he there? What happened? And so I started hearing these numbers, $12, $13 million. And I'm like, that's not true. That can't be true. And I kept talking to people that I trust and they kept saying, no, that is what was on the contract. And I'm like, no. And I talked to enough people. I'm like, oh my God, somebody really put that number on a contract.
$13.85 million to be exact.
Can we just talk about how insane this number is? So Andy, you had something in for our audience.
Oh, I think Stuart put this one in. The Kenny Pickett one?
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
For a lot of drafts of that too, but for a lot of drafts of this story, I had kind of read through this probably three times, and then I was like, wait a minute. And I think this was either you or Alan Taylor, but I thought it might be you. Well, you know, the previous April, which is April 2022.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
A big Florida booster in this story pledged $12.6 million to the Florida Athletic Department. That is the largest single pledge mm-hmm. in the history of this huge university with right. a great athletic program. $12.6 million. They were going to give
more than that.
Somebody was going to give yeah. Jaden Rashada more than $1 million, more than that. And by the way, this is not a knock on Jaden Rashada. It's going to sound like it, but it's not. They were doing this, and he had proven essentially nothing.
Nothing. And this is so much more than Caleb Williams will make this year. So you mentioned Hugh Hathcock making that big pledge to Florida. That's the name of the donor. And it was, at the time, the single largest donation in the history of Florida's athletic department. Now, I did call around. Nobody would tell me exactly how long that spread over. Because usually when donors pledge that sort of money, they don't write one check right away. It's over a number of years. Now, I don't know how many years it's spread over. But the laughable thing about this, like you mentioned, Bruce, is that this is larger than that, and it's spread over 4 years, which if I were guessing, is probably the same or less time than the largest donation ever is spread over.
And I think a key line in the story, when we're describing this whole situation, how it fell apart when it was terminated, four sources with knowledge of the contract negotiations confirmed that the Gator Collective, which typically writes deals for much smaller amounts, never got a guarantee in writing from a donor or donors that they would cover the amount in Rashada's
right,
contract.
Right. I think people were working off, I'm good for it, or he's good for it, or she's good for it. And basically third party saying, this person's good for it. And because that had been the way it had operated previously on these other deals, it was like, okay. But the difference is, the scope of these deals, you're talking about the difference between somebody who's getting $1,500 a month and $300,000 a month. This is a very different deal. And typically, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just not in that big of a business to understand this, but I would imagine when you have these amounts, typically there is some sort of written guarantee of the financial backing. I mean, we all know, we've all tried to get a mortgage, and we know the bank is just up your wazoo trying to make sure you're going to be good for this every month. Like, and that's on Jaden's representation for not making absolutely sure.
Well, that's where we should probably mention who his representation was. So, yes. I mean, just to back up a second, the reason I I really wanted us to write a story like this for a while. You know, ever since I first became aware of NIL Collectives, which was probably around a year ago this time, you know, obviously we've been tracking this whole, it's a very new concept and it's been fast emerging. And so over the last year, I've been tracking, you know, how this all works and the direction it was going. And Jaden Rashada's name kept coming up as the hot commodity. And as we detail in the story, you know, he was highly ranked relative to most quarterbacks in the country, but he was not, for instance, Arch Manning. You know, he was the seventh ranked quarterback. And this situation, you know, first of all, Mike Caspino, the lawyer in Orange County, who first made waves when he represented Nico, the
Iama Mealava.
That was another one where we saw the contract, $8 million over 4 years. Caspino clearly, and all the attention he got from that, he was being flooded with families and kids who wanted the same thing. Mm-hmm. And what we found out over the course of that year was that was an extreme outlier. And so was this. There's not a bunch of $8 million or $13 million NIL contracts around there for recruits.
There's not a lot of $1 million
no,
NIL contracts.
I think a typical
high school kids who've really proven nothing in the college world. The other thing is, this guy shopped. You know, Rashada went on this college tour where he was going all over these places: Texas A&M, LSU. And it was basically a dog and pony show to try to goose the bidding so Caspino could reset the quarterback market. And I think this is the part where it got really bizarre because, you know, Stu would kind of say, hey, we'd mention a school, and then you'd go chase it and see what, and all of a sudden you'd hear this school doesn't have any money for this. This school's not even interested in this quarterback. And so he was throwing stuff against the wall to try, not Stu, the agent, was throwing stuff against
the
wall.
Which is what agents do. That's
it is, but
I see it in the coaching market all the time.
We do, but what's different in this, Andy, is the money we're talking about here at times feels like monopoly money.
Which I would say is ultimately how it was treated when this contract was written.
Yeah, yeah. Especially the Florida one, right? But with these coaching contract deals, the schools, they have money.
Right.
This is not the schools. These are like random people that at times are being put, like Stu, you had mentioned, you know, NFL contracts. We're talking about like A-Rod getting $252 million. You know, the money on that is, you know, like even the Nico deal, $8 million. There's no guarantee he's going to get anywhere near that. The money we're used to talking about, especially whether we being not the three of us necessarily, but just people who are in the media or even people who are just on social media, I think the number gets thrown around and it's much, you know, people are just like, oh, he's definitely getting that. No, he's definitely not getting that in these cases. I mean, I think we've talked to so many people who are, you know, coaches who are dealing with some of this and they're like, this is not like a lot of it is monopoly money, and you have the agents, and that's what these guys are. I mean, this guy happens to be a lawyer, the person who jumped in place after Caspino parted ways with the Rashada family is, you know, he's not a lawyer, but he's basically an agent.
He's a sophomore at SMU, Jackson Zager, and his partner Tommy Thompson is a 22-year-old commercial real estate broker.
I don't think we can emphasize that enough. That, you know, of all the story is just full of things that you're like, how can that be possible? That Jaden's representative for a deal of this magnitude was a sophomore at SMU. Jaden is from California. He briefly enrolled at IMG Academy in Florida during COVID.
The two guys I mentioned.
He overlapped with those IMG two
Academy.
Guys.
Yeah. Yes.
And so that guy has he's an aspiring agent. He's a sophomore, again, a sophomore at SMU. And Jaden's his big client. I think one big difference, you guys use the example of coaches, for instance. Mm-hmm. Those coaches' contracts are on the USA Today database, right? Any school, when they're going to negotiate a deal with their coach, knows what the market is.
Yeah.
There is, because this is the wild, wild west and brand new and there's no regulation. Nobody knows for sure what a player is getting at X school. And so this, to me, Jaden Rashada became a proxy, basically. It wasn't about his football skills. It wasn't like, this is the quarterback of a generation. He's worth X. These numbers are just based on, and I think in this case, we can safely say, Jaden became a proxy for this like show of strength, this flex contest between Miami's booster, John Ruiz, and Florida's boosters. This was a social media thing, right? Where they're
it's the same thing as the schools do with their coaches' contracts. It's almost like they feel like they have to give their coaches a certain amount of money, or people will act like they don't care.
No one in some cases.
Yeah. So the kind of pissing match between Florida and Miami is a big part of this.
Yeah.
And Bruce, you and I had talked about this. I'm not even sure how much of it's real on Miami's side.
It's not, at least on the Miami coach. It's weird. Miami's drive to get Jaden Rashada was as much, it was really more about, they thought it would bring them some recruiting momentum. It actually didn't. I mean, Miami had a quarterback commitment of a player that was not as highly ranked by the recruiting sites, but was somebody that they thought more of as a prospect. They took the other commitment. Now, again, Miami's part of this is, you know, we detail in the story, we are not getting, we could never confirm the $9.5 million. If anything, we heard it was way, 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 way less than that, which is nutty, because if it's like a fraction of that and Florida's collective ponied up some insane number where they were bidding against themselves, it just shows you how farcical this whole thing really has gotten.
They clearly got duped. They believe the 9.5 number was real. I can tell you, I saw a document on which the number 9.5 million was printed, but it was in no way proof that Miami had agreed to it. Right. Now we do know.
I'm going to send the Athletic a document that says I demand $9.5 million a year in my next contract.
What we do know,
see how that goes.
Yeah. What we do know. And look, this speaks to the different, like the word collective has become a catch-all for these organizations, and they're not all the same, right? This Gator Collective was clearly a fly-by-the-seat-of-its-pants little organization. John Ruiz, the guy who has become associated with Miami football and all these NIL deals, runs a publicly traded company that has now been rebranded as LifeWallet. These Miami athletes do endorsements for this product, LifeWallet.
They film commercials that, yeah.
If you're going to make a contract with someone, chances are if you make it with a publicly traded company, they're a surer bet to come through with the cash than this collective. What we know is that
if they don't, there's an investigation.
LifeWallet, we know, did make a deal with Jaden Rashada when he was still committed to Miami for his high school senior year. It is in California, unlike in Florida, you can give a high school athlete NIL money. Of course, it's against NCAA rules if it's a recruiting inducement. This whole article is a recruiting inducement. But it was like he had gotten like $125,000 at the time that he flipped to Florida. We do note that Miami or that Ruiz's company was reimbursed for the $125,000. We don't know who they were reimbursed by.
Yeah.
This is why, you know, these athletes. They need good representation. They're getting caught up in this whole smoke and mirrors game where that, like you guys have said, it's monopoly money. Who knows if Florida ever intended to pay him that money, or Florida's collective, who knows if they ever intended to pay him that money, though. If it was a bait and switch, I don't know why they terminated it.
I don't think that was a bait and switch on the collectives. Because remember, the Gator Collective does much smaller deals than this.
Right.
They're not even doing this unless somebody has said, I'm good for this money.
And they terminated the deal 2 weeks before signing day. So it's not like they got him to sign and then backed out. Now, he did end up signing. And that's a big mystery of it. Why did he sign knowing this thing was?
We never did solve that one. We asked a lot of people, and a lot of people, even off the record, were like, I have no idea.
We know that discussions were continued.
Right. The discussions did continue. But I mean, like that was also down the line. Like that was in January.
Yeah.
When
those Andy, let me ask happen. You this, because you know the people on the money side at Florida. If you are Jaden Rashada, you have gone from, you know, agent to agent. But if you're sitting there on the other side of the country, at least that's, you know, kind of where you're based, and you think you've entered this agreement with the University of Florida. If I'm a 17-year-old kid, I'm thinking it's the University of Florida. It's not
exactly.
But that's not who you entered the agreement
with. Startup business
with.
Yeah. That like is sending me email all the time. I'm thinking, yeah, they are going to be good for it. We have a contract. Like, why would like logic would
because it's not a contract with the University of Florida.
I'm sure, I'm sure he thought they were one in the same.
I don't expect Jaden Rashada to know that.
Right.
But if you're going to be an agent representing Jaden Rashada, you'd better know that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
There's a name we haven't brought up yet that we should probably bring up, Darren Heitner. He's a lawyer in Miami who is very outspoken on Twitter as kind of the, you know, like he was one of the first ones when NIL went into effect. He represents the Cavender twins, the basketball players from they were at Fresno State. Now they're at Miami.
Anthony Richardson.
He was behind them having a big ad in Times Square. And so he became a go-to, somebody that not only represents athletes, but gets quoted in articles as an authority on NIL.
And he's very prominent on Twitter and social media.
And he's a Florida alum and a big Florida fan. And as we depict in this story, he had a big part in the...
Well, he says he didn't, but he was tweeting as if...
Yeah, his social media trail is in the story if you want to look at it. Yeah. But here's where things get really... Well, they've already gotten really sketchy, but here's another sketchy element of it. You know, from day one, he was affiliated with the Gator Collective as basically their legal advisor.
Yes, it's advertised on their website.
Yeah, not a secret. However, he's also listed as the legal advisor on their website of JTM Sports, the agency of this 19-year-old, or I don't know how old he is, sophomore at SMU.
He's in his 20s.
So he's linked to both sides of this negotiation, which is a big no-no.
Now, Darren, we quote him in the story as saying he was not asked by the Gator Collective to provide any sort of counsel for this one. So let's get that out there. But yeah,
but he's also mentioned in the story. He also confirms that he sent
a text to a member of the Gator Collective saying, "Here are the numbers," basically because the collective had requested, "Okay, what do you put in this contract? What are the numbers to put in the contract?" And Darren said that came from a third party. And I asked him who that third party was, and he declined to name the third party. So that's
so again, like
who said I'm good for this?
Yeah. So the reason I bring it up is to what you guys were just saying about he probably thought this was a deal with the University of Florida. At like 2 days after he committed, he's at the Florida South Carolina game at the Swamp. Mm-hmm. Jaden is, and Darren's posting pictures of himself with a sideline pass around his neck with Jaden doing the Gator Chomp. If you're Jaden Rashada, you probably think he works for the University of Florida, or he has some sort of official capacity with the University of Florida. So
he did, I believe, go in there and talk to them. And he was also, he's also an adjunct at the UF Law School.
Okay. So I want to ask you guys, I mean, we've talked about nothing but this contract basically, but this is a bigger story than that. And it was really important to me to tell the story of the kid himself. He's not just a dollar figure. He's a player from Northern California who's been through a lot. And, you know, we paint the picture of him at Elite 11 finals last summer, really struggling, crying at one point. due to the attention around that rumored $9.5 million deal. We wrote a similar story, a little bit similar story about T.A. Cunningham last fall. He's a year younger, defensive lineman.
Some of the same people in the margins.
Yeah.
Aaron Heitner, Mike Caspino, they were all lurking in the same space.
To me, the common theme, the common thread between them, if you read our story, is I don't think Jaden Rashada himself was out there trying to get a massive NIL deal. I think that was, I mean, his father is obviously a big part of the story. He played at ASU. Caspino was involved, then eventually the JTM sports guys, Heitner. Did you guys feel like what do you feel like his, I guess, how complicit is Jaden himself in what ended up happening where he's, now he's not at Florida, Miami, he's committed to ASU. And as we report, we believe there's no NIL deal there.
I don't think he's particularly complicit. I think the people around him and you know, there's a rotating cast of people around him kept chasing a bigger and bigger bag. I don't think they ever cared what he actually wanted in this whole thing.
I agree with Andy, but I think a big part of this is also, you know, we are operating and looking this through a lens of people who've covered college sports for 25 years or so, who have all these experiences. You know, I think back to like Albert Means and all these other recruiting stories along the way that form our perspective. This is a 16/17 year old kid who is
actually he's 19.
Well, I mean, I'm saying when this thing started, he's like 17 years old and he's going through this process. And I don't think, like, one thing I think we got to keep in mind is we may know certain rules and different things as what they are, but a lot of times the kids don't know this because what they're being shown maybe by the schools, and certainly in this case by the agents, they think that's like standard operating procedure because that's how
it's and the other part of it is, and that's what schools and coaches use to their advantage for years and years is the, unless you had an older brother or you went to a really good high school where there were some other players that were involved in the process, you walk in completely blind as the player, as the parents. And so you kind of put your faith in these other people that they're operating on the up and up. And a lot of times they weren't, or they'd pull scholarship offers and stuff like that. And in this case, now you add in, you've got this less than 2 year old concept of NIL payments where the market hasn't settled. People have rushed into this marketplace trying to make a buck and they're just kind of glom on everybody they can. It's a tough deal to figure out if you're a young person trying to make this decision with all these people coming at you.
I think another factor that people need to try to remember is, look, I don't know the Rashada's financial situation at all. I'm guessing they're not the Mannings. The pressure these kids feel, they become a vehicle for, I could take care of my family, right? Like I could.
Oh yeah.
They feel a pressure to
set your whole family up.
They feel a pressure to be the you know, these people are telling me I can make this. You know, we have people in the story who know Jaden saying, you know, when he committed to Miami, they got the sense he would have rather been at Florida even then. But this $9.5 million deal that maybe did or didn't exist, he probably felt a lot of pressure to take that because he could take care of his family.
Whatever the deal was for.
Yeah.
But
on that point, it's curious because, and this is, you know, maybe not that relevant to the story in the grand scheme of it anymore, but like Caspino said, he turned down millions basically from Florida to choose Miami. That's at odds with that contention.
I don't think that Florida,
maybe those millions didn't exist at that time. Based on people I've talked to at that time, Florida was like, we're done with you. Don't even bother. They were just fed up with the constant ask for more.
Florida had actually, to your point, Andy. So he has one of these televised hat ceremonies. Florida's hat is on the table. We learned much later that wasn't an option, that Florida had pulled his scholarship offer because they were sick of dealing with all this. So
yet somehow they decided a few months later, yeah, let's deal with all of it again. That was,
well, to Bruce's point, the nut, that thing that Caspino claimed that, oh, he turned down millions. if they did, it would have been news to Billy Napier's staff because they had pulled his scholarship offer at that point.
Right.
I think one thing that, you know, is there's a part of this too. We were talking, Stu, about the, you know, he goes to the Elite 11. This is how our story starts, and, you know, in the beginning, and the burden he is bringing. And at one point, you know, one of the coaches there, George Whitfield, had said he is wearing an $11 million backpack essentially on his back. All the other quarterbacks know his dollar figure. And in, you know, as George put it, he goes, this is right now the most hyped quarterback recruit in the history of recruiting. Because you may have four stars and you may have five stars. Remember, like last year or 2 years ago, Quinn Ewers had the highest 247 rating, but that's like, you know, that's fractional and who knows, you know, whatever. There are five stars about as high as you could go. Now, all of a sudden, now we got a dollar figure and it's $11 million. It is insanely high of what we're talking about.
And whether that number was true or not, and we're pretty sure it's not and wasn't, everybody has believed every single thing. Every number that comes across in NIL, it fascinates me. Like, people buy it. People in our business buy it, who should know better. They buy every single number. And so, yeah, it was probably, and the kids aren't dumb. Like, they're looking at him going, well, if he's worth that much, what am I worth? And it's a weird dynamic.
By the way, just for context, you guys remember Jalen Hurts?
Oh, yeah.
I've heard. Remember, Jalen Hurts?
Okay for himself. Yeah.
You remember where he's at? Okay. Well, he is. But you know what his contract was when he signed? 4 years, $6 million.
Right.
Less than
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Kenny Pickett, Stuart put this in the story, was the only first round quarterback in the draft last year. His full 4 year deal. Now there's a 5th year option, but the 4 year deal prior to the option being picked up is worth $200,000 more than this contract that Jaden signed. $200,000.
Like you guys said, monopoly money.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. Jalen Hurts won a national title at Alabama, was a starter there, was the SEC Offensive Player of the Year as a true freshman. And he only got $6 million. He also came in second for the Heisman.
Yes, at Oklahoma, yeah.
And now we're going to say that this guy who's, like, again, had done nothing in high school or done, you know, done nothing in college, is going to – somebody's going to give him more than double that.
Well, I think, you know, again, we're dealing with college boosters here. They're not acting as rational people. I think some people will say, oh, he's not worth X. Like, this kid isn't proving anything. He's not worth X. This isn't pro sports, right? That's exactly what they don't acquire a player just to acquire a player. They have to say
it's funny, they're
determining
though,
whether it's worth their, yeah.
It used to be, I mean, very recently in the NFL, it was kind of like this. It took until Sam Bradford's rookie contract that the owners and the NFLPA both agreed, hey, this is kind of dumb. Like, shouldn't the guys who've accomplished themselves in the league make more than the rookies? And it took adjusting the CBA for that. In this particular situation, you don't have a CBA. It will take the market adjusting to it, and you're still going to have some random outliers where somebody's like, I got to get this guy.
Yeah, but I think it is, from what we've heard from coaches, I think it has, like, I remember in the spring asking a coach, why are the recruits in high school getting all this money and the actual transfer portal kids who've proven themselves aren't? It doesn't seem like a very efficient market. And eventually it did.
School. Yeah.
I think it's flipped. I think when the transfer portal window opened, we quickly realized that, I mean, people were throwing money at Sam Hartman, at, you know, guys who, Drake May, you heard the comments about him, right? Like, right. I think going forward, that's where the money's going to go. I mean,
I think it's going to separate. Like, at one point, and it's funny, I remember exactly where I was, where Stu reached out to me. This was in like the latest round of Caspino stuff. And this was, I don't think this was entirely a Rashada thing, but it was still his former agent. And he talked about a certain dollar figure, and it was in seven figures. And Stuart said, oh, this guy said this is whatever's going on. And I reached out to the school in question, and the coach there was like, laughed. And he was like, even if we had that money, he goes, I'm not going to give it to a high school quarterback. I would probably spread that around to like eight transfers.
Yeah. I think people are figuring it out and the market's figuring itself out, but you still have these weird random actors that are going to do stuff like this. And that's one thing I've been trying to explain to people since our story came out. Like, this is not a representative deal, not even close. This is like a more representative deal for most of these college football players would be, you know, a few thousand a month is what they're getting. And the really good ones, some of them are going to get into seven figures, but not many of them.
But I wouldn't be surprised if there's another, like Dylan Raiola, right? The number one quarterback in this coming class. You could see where he would be somebody who could become the subject of, we've really got a, you know, a booster's wanting, you know, if you're a George, like Georgia's one of his top schools, like you could see a Georgia booster being like, we're going to get that. We're going to, we can't let that guy go to Alabama. You see a school like
Nebraska giving his uncle a job on the staff. Oh, wait, they already did that.
Exactly. That kind of stuff's always been part of recruiting, and that stuff will continue to be part of recruiting. But by no means do I think because somebody was willing to put $13.85 million on a piece of paper, that that is in any way indicative of what the recruiting market will be going forward. This was a very unique story, a perfect storm of circumstances, and that's why we wanted to tell it in the detail that we did.
It was a lot of detail. We talked to a lot of people. But I will say before we go, or before I go, because I know you guys have more to talk about, but this was a complete team effort. Bruce, you were involved. Manny Navarro was involved. Our Miami writer, Ari Wasserman, our recruiting writer, was involved.
Alan Taylor, our Florida writer.
And then
Antonio Morales,
our USC writer, Antonio Morales, Kate Hieropoulos, one of our editors, Jill Thaw, Jennifer Armstrong. Like, this was a big time team effort. And it's one of those things that I don't know that a lot of places other than The Athletic could pull this off.
What's crazy is that it came together in a week. You know, we had been certainly tracking his story. We've been picking at it
for months.
Yeah, but all of a sudden, you know, early last week, you got the contract and it was all hands on deck. And I want to say the same thing you did. I really want to, you know, you and I got the bylines, but everybody that you just mentioned played a big part in putting this story together.
Yeah, it was fun to collaborate with everybody because a lot of times it's not easy to do that. And I felt like this time everybody was lifting heavy and really contributing a lot.
Andy, before Stu kicks you out, I do want to ask a question.
Okay.
So you were obviously you're on the East Coast, Stu and I are on the West Coast. You posted this story before we did, and you were able to see some of the engagement on it. And I'm curious, this story, a lot of people, either fans or certainly people who work in the recruiting space, diehard fans, I mean, kind of had some sense there was a lot of stuff going on. They didn't know probably what. They didn't know necessarily what the details of the contract, if it even existed, were. But I'm curious, was there anything you've seen in response to when you posted this screenshot of the contract and the details that got your attention or something? You just, because like we're operating not entirely in a vacuum, but largely in a vacuum through this last couple of weeks.
I think a lot of people still just can't believe the numbers. And I keep telling them it's the numbers on the contract are real. The money behind it was not. And that's a key distinction. Because if you have to guarantee the money, I don't think the numbers would have been that big on the contract.
So what you're saying is when Stu lured you away from SI, he didn't write it on a bar napkin. And
yeah, there was more of a written agreement, and I was pretty sure they were good for it. Well, remember, I said no the first time, so I had to make sure there. It took 2 years for me to figure out that they were good for it before I finally bit.
Does it say on your? I'm guessing it. I don't know. I haven't seen your contract, but I'm guessing it doesn't have a clause in it that says the collective can terminate at any time.
No, and if it had, I would have probably called the attorney for The Athletic and been like, we're not, because that actually we can talk about, we're not going to get into the specific details of my contract, but I like when I signed up with The Athletic, there was back and forth between me and their attorney about certain clauses. I'm like, this can't be in here. I need to add this. And then they would run up the flagpole. And if it was okay, then they'd say yes. Or they'd say, we can't say this, but we can say this. And that's what you're supposed to do. like somebody looked at that termination clause in this contract, which basically allowed them to terminate it for anything. And was like, okay, sounds good. Sign it up. Like if someone had sent me this contract, a potential employer had sent me this contract with that termination clause in it, I would have said, we're not going forward here. Like this ain't happening. And I'm not a lawyer, but if I handed it to a lawyer, that's what they'd tell me too. Like, you can't sign this. Because they can just say no. They can just poof, it's gone.
Hopefully, Jaden Rashada, who's signed now with Arizona State, obviously, hopefully things will go well for him and there will be some stability and everything there. Because I think, just to kind of button up on this, you really feel for somebody who gets defined by something that maybe is out of their control entirely. And it's not to say that the family doesn't have responsibility in the, you know, in this circus as it played out, but just in terms of like, he's the one who's going to bear this, you know, for probably as long as, you know, and if he has a terrific career and turns out to be like an all Pac-12 quarterback at Arizona State or, you know, an all American, then I think people will, it'll be a footnote. And if he doesn't, then it'll be, you know, it'll be like Tate Martell's 5-star ranking and so many of these other quarterbacks.
I think he's in a good spot for him right now because he's not coming in with the weight of that deal on his shoulders. He's not coming in with those expectations. Kenny Dillingham's the new coach there. I don't know that Jaden Rashada will wind up playing this year. He may need some time to mature and get to the point where he's ready to play at the Power 5 level. And that's fine. That's how it should be. Most quarterbacks do have that luxury. He would not have had that luxury at Florida, and it would have been doomed from the start.
And let's not forget with the immediate eligibility transfers, if, you know, we could be playing this game all over again a year from now, if he's not liking his experience at ASU.
Or if he blows up there, then he might be getting paid for actual accomplishment on the field.
It's true. All right, Andy, thank you. First of all, it's great teaming up with you on the story. Thanks so much for coming on the Audible.
My pleasure, guys.
Thanks, Andy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, Bruce, it's mailbag time. As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. This first one is from Matt Kilfoyle. Hey, guys, a few episodes ago, you got asked about potential sleeping giant programs, and I was surprised that neither of you mentioned Virginia Tech. I know that the Vic brothers played an outsized role in that program's peak 15 to 20 years ago, but there was a 7 to 8 year window post-Miami dynasty where the ACC essentially ran through Blacksburg, and they seem to check many of the boxes required for sleeping giant status, like recruiting area, large and engaged fan base, solid but attainable academics, great stadium, et cetera. What do you think, Bruce? Sleeping giant?
I mean, all those details he listed, you could check them off. Definitely good recruiting area. I agree with Matt. Great stadium environment. I've talked a lot about how much I love going to games there, how much, you know, energy's in that place. But I don't know if I would say it any more so than like 8 or 10 other schools that are in the Southeast or anything like that. I also think there's other schools that maybe have better resources a little bit. Maybe better facilities. I don't know if I would say sleeping giant. Plus, they were really good. As he said, this is not a program that was like a 500 team for a long time. I mean, they have been really, really good. So I feel like my definition of a sleeping giant was somebody who hadn't been good in like 25 years, and that's not the case with them.
Well, they did play in a national championship game. I know people are going to say that it wouldn't have happened without Michael Vick. You could also say that was a much different system. That was the BCS. They probably only played 11 games. I'd have to go back, but I bet they were 11-0 coming from the Big East. So, and then, you know, those, like you mentioned, those teams, there was a run there where they're winning 11, 12 games, finishing in the top five or top 10. So I don't know any reason why they couldn't return to that level. Could they win a national championship? That's going to be difficult in the 12 team playoff era. But I certainly think that program, I mean, that program has really, really fallen into mediocrity. And it's been a while now since they were going to BCS or New Year's Six Bowls with the right coach. And I think it's too early to say whether Brent Pry is that guy or not. Why couldn't they get back to that, you know, top of the ACC status?
I don't disagree. My whole point was, this is a team, like, I looked at it since 1999, six top 10 seasons. Like, maybe I'm, in his definition, that is a sleeping giant. They've been asleep for the last, whatever it is, 6 or 7 years. But again, I guess I'm just drifting on the definition of how I see it, as a program that hasn't been as good as Virginia Tech was in the 2000s. I mean, they had, if I look
at, you're saying that their success was too recent to be considered a sleeping giant?
Yes, that's all I'm looking at. If you look from 2004 to 2011, they never won less than 10 games. So they've been sleeping the last like 5 or 6 years, but
they've been sleeping for the last decade at this point.
No, I wouldn't say
that. The end of that run was 2011.
Yeah, but they won 10 games.
They had one 10-win season.
And they won 9 the year after that. This is not like they're Nebraska. They have much better recent history than that. If you look at Beamer's run, there was not just six top 10 seasons since 1999. There was a bunch of other top 25s in there.
Oh, he had it rolling from the time. And really, I mean, nothing in that program's history, if you look back, there's nothing in that program's history suggested that they would ever have that kind of sustained elite success. But starting in around 1995, when they had back-to-back 10-win seasons, 11 wins in 99 and 2000, 10 in 2002. And then, like you said, from 04, which is the first year in the ACC, through 2011, double-digit wins every season. Let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4 top 10 finishes. So the question is, was that period from 95 to 2011, you know, it's a complete outlier compared to their history before that. Will it never happen again? Or will, with the right coach, does that, do we see Virginia
Tech? I think
my thing it comes down to is that the ACC is not a very strong conference, right? Clemson's obviously had quite a run. Florida State has had quite a run before that. But this isn't like trying to get to the top of the SEC, right? Or trying to unseat Ohio State and Michigan at the top of the Big Ten. I think they could be a regular ACC championship contender again.
I think they could get back to that. I guess my look at the sleeping giant, I would see like an Arizona State as a better definition of that, where you have a pretty good recruiting base. You're in a big market, but you have only had one top 10 season in the last 35 years. That's a lot more mediocrity than what we're talking about with Virginia Tech. I agree with what you said before, but I'm just saying my definition of sleeping giant, like, I wouldn't put them in that category just because I don't think they've been mediocre for that long, just for the last, like, for basically the most of the Fuente years.
All right. So from William Horton, hi, Stu and Bruce. I wanted to follow up to the other listener's email about which coach you guys think has the best chance to win. There was a little bit of confusion, by the way, about that question. The question was about who will be the first who will win a national championship first, right? And we ended up going choosing between Ryan Day, Lincoln Riley, and Brian Kelly. At some point, that got interpreted maybe wrongly, I don't know, to who will, which of the, what percent chance do you give each of these guys to win a national championship? Let's go back to who wins it first. So we mentioned Day, Riley, and Kelly. He's asking whether we want to add Jim Harbaugh to the mix since he's made it to two straight CFPs and beaten Ohio State 2 years in a row, plus kept a lot of his key players from this year. It seems like he's got a better shot than Ryan Day does, at least as long as he stays at Michigan. What are your thoughts?
It's a good question. I'm glad he sent it in. Thank you, Bill. I think we should have him in there. I would put him probably fourth on that list. My order was Ryan Day, Lincoln Riley, Brian Kelly, Jim Harbaugh. I debate whether I would put him third or fourth. You know,
so it's a weird.
I might put him third on this.
I feel like we're in a weird place right now where Michigan has dominated Ohio State 2 years in a row. There is no question they own that rivalry right now. And people still have more faith in Ryan Day and Ohio State. I know I do in terms of winning a national championship. And I think it's about what happened in this last year's playoff field, right? Michigan kind of laid an egg, frankly, against TCU, a team that people think they should have beaten. Ohio State is kicking a 50-yard field goal at the end to knock off Georgia. And if they do, after what happened to TCU against Georgia, we think Ohio State would have beaten TCU. Don't you agree? Like, that's the reason why you're not thinking about putting Harbaugh above Day.
Yeah, I would put it this way. And what you said is true. This is how I would define it. Ohio State, I think, is built enough to beat or can beat anybody out of the SEC. Michigan is built to beat Ohio State. And they have done that. And they have done it with their blueprint. Now, could they beat Georgia or Alabama? I think it'd be harder for them. I think they could do it. It just, there's not as much margin for error. I mean, if you look at that Michigan TCU game, which we were both at, almost everything that could have gone wrong for Michigan did. The quarterback threw two pick sixes. How often does that happen in a game where the game's not a blowout? They botched up the red zone really bad inside the five. They had a touchdown that probably was a touchdown and got taken away, and they still were in the game, right? Mm-hmm. I would still hold to Ryan Day as number one on that list. And then I think where it goes to two through four, it's tighter. You know, I still probably lean towards Lincoln Riley. He is younger. I think he has more access to talent. And I think if you're a special offensive player, you're going to want to, of all these guys, you're going to be most inclined to look at what Lincoln Riley's doing and go there. The question is, can you get enough good players on defense to win a national title? And that is a question. As far as the other guys, Kelly and Harbaugh, you know, I don't know how long they're going to be coaching. Maybe they're, you know, is Brian Kelly going to coach another decade? Maybe. I don't know if I would, that seems like a lot at his age, right? Maybe it's 5-6 more years. Harbaugh's similar age, although he feels a little bit younger, but I don't know. That's how I would go. 1-2 and maybe 3A and 3B.
There's also the factor of, I still don't believe Harbaugh's flirtations with the NFL are over, right? So I'm pretty sure those other three are going to be college football coaches for the duration, however long they are college coaches. I know some people.
You don't think Lincoln Riley or Ryan Day would ever go, and Ryan Day's been in the NFL. You don't think they would ever go back, Ryan Day?
Ryan Day more so than Lincoln Riley. But I mean, that's a tough job to give up. I mean, that we both agree, I believe, that Ohio State is the best job in college football. So to leave that for the NFL, where you, if you flounder, you could be fired in 2 years, that's a tough situation.
Yeah, but think about the flip side of that. You're at Ohio State. Like, I was at that game in Ann Arbor, and when they played Michigan in Columbus, there are people wanted him fired for losing one game. It was like 35-5 or whatever his record was at that point. And there's that much pressure and there's that much of a fishbowl on his family in Columbus. You got Urban still kind of lingering around. and the shadow of him, like,
no, you're right. You're right.
That's different than it's going to be in the NFL. I'm not saying there isn't pressure in the NFL. There is, but I think that's different in college, where if you go, if you win 85% of your games in the NFL, you're a god. If you win 84% of your games at Ohio State and you lose the wrong one, they don't want you there. I mean, last year they came within a, like you said, a long field goal, but just that missed, probably of winning a national title. And there's still people who are probably nauseated by what happened to Ohio State this year, who are Ohio State diehards.
That would have been really interesting. If Ohio State had won the national championship, would the fans have forgiven him for the second straight Michigan loss? I'm inclined to think yes, until next year's Michigan game came up. But all right, those are all good points you made. Now, you're obviously plugged into the coaching carousel more than anyone. You know, Harbaugh NFL possibility is more top of mind because we know he interviewed for the NFL job again this year. Was there any inkling that Ryan Day was starting to put out NFL feelers or vice versa?
Not to my knowledge of any substance or anything like that. But I would not be surprised if at some point he decided to try something different. Again, this is a guy who's worked in the NFL before, not somebody who, you know, like I said, the guy who he followed, it was completely different for him. All right, Stu, from our friend Dan Klobuchar in Minneapolis. Hey, Bruce and Stu, as a Purdue grad, I can't disagree with your hiring grade for Ryan Walters. I think that Matt Painter will win more games this season than Walters wins in his Boilermakers coaching career.
Ouch. However, I don't remember what grade I gave, but by no means do I think he's going to be a spectacular failure.
Yeah. However, I was wondering how much your grade for the Jeff Brohm hire was based on his attending Louisville as compared to his actual coaching record. While Purdue won the Big Ten West this season, that was mainly schedule-based. You could say that the only solid win the Boilers had this season was against Illinois. Brohm was barely over 500 as Purdue's coach, and while the big wins that he had were fun, the inconsistency that his team displayed was incredibly frustrating as a fan. Everyone remembers the big Ohio State win. No one remembers the same team being 6-7 overall with a loss to Eastern Michigan and a 49-point blowout loss against Auburn.
Boy, you talk about fans not appreciating a coach, Bruce. I guess I missed the news where Purdue has these inflated expectations where going, let's see here, 7-6, 6-7, 4-8, 2-4 in that weird year, then 9-4 with a win over Tennessee in a bowl game, and 8-6 with a Big Ten championship game appearance. Like, that, to me, that's above serve in Purdue football history. Now, I'm looking back at Joe Tiller, who had a great run there. He did have back-to-back nine-win seasons to start his tenure, and then the Rose Bowl season. He did have Drew Brees. Let's important to note that. Yeah, I mean, it looks like Joe Tiller had a better tenure than Jeff Brohm did. But I don't think Jeff Brohm was – I mean, I thought he did great things there. What about you?
I thought he was a terrific coach there as well. So for people who don't remember, like me, what did you give Ryan Walters?
I don't remember either. I look it up. But I would say to his question, yes, absolutely, Jeff Brohm's ties to Louisville are a big part of giving him – that grade. I mean, it's all about fit, and some coaches is just are right for one school but not another. And you can't emphasize enough what it's not just Jeff, his whole family, the Brohms are football royalty in the city of Louisville. They've hoped this day would come for a long, long time now. So, you know, this was their dream hire. Made even more dreamy, by the way, by the fact that I don't think that most of them wanted Scott Satterfield there anymore. But Purdue C+ for Ryan Walters.
Ooh, I would have been higher on him than you.
What would you have had?
I would probably had a big B+. Ryan Walters did an amazing job with that defense at Illinois, and I think he is a really good hire for them.
I think he could be a great head coach, no question about it. My concern was, hiring a defensive focus coach at Purdue. We just mentioned two guys, Joe Tiller and Jeff Brohm, who are huge offensive innovators, especially Tiller, who was running a spread passing offense certainly before anyone else in the Big Ten and most of the country. So Ryan Walters is a defensive guy. He's going to come in, I assume, going to try to turn Purdue into a stout defensive program. I think that might be hard to do. You're not really going to be able to bring.
You can say that, but he hired a true air raid guy to run his offense. I'm not saying that Graham Harrell will, you know, turn it into what Brohm had, but that definitely shows signs of him willing to be very aggressive on offense and not try to be what Iowa's looking like.
Well, two things I would say about doing these coaching grade hires. For one, you're definitely going to be wrong about some of these guys. And two, it would be a very boring column if I gave everybody an A, right? So somebody had to get the C+, the C, which I gave Stanford, the C- that I gave Cincinnati, or it would be a very boring column. We appreciate the questions. As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. And please go to The Athletic and read the Jaden Rashada story that we talked about with Andy. We'll see you next time.